Good morning and welcome back to another episode of Hey, It's a Sports Show. I'm your host. Ooh, yeah. Lance Robbins. It is January 28th. Happy Monday, and it's still 2013. Today's show is brought to you by Plants. Plants. Thanks for the oxygen, buddies. A lot to catch up on with the big weekend of sports, and we won't have enough time to cover it all, so let's get going. Did anyone watch the Pro Bowl? I don't care if you did or you didn't. So we won't be covering that topic, but we will be looking at a review of UFC on Fox 6, a little NHL news, some bad news on the injury front in the NBA, and we'll start the show with the Chicago Bulls' Jimmy Butler, and we're going to run him through something called the splits. The splits, brought to you by bananas. Bananas. Hey, Mother Nature, could you be any more phallic? What has Jimmy Butler done to earn the right to go through the splits? You may be asking, hey, Jimmy Butler, isn't he the backup forward on the Chicago Bulls? Why are we putting him through the splits? Because he's been starting in place of the all-star Luol Deng. It's just like Doctor. You got to put that before their name. All-star Luol Deng. Luol, who had injured his hammy 5 games ago. Hammy is not short for a delicious sandwich. It is short for hamstring, the back of the leg. And he's been day-to-day since. And Jimmy Butler has stepped in for the last 5 games and done a tremendous job. So the guy that Joe Kim Noah calls Jimmy Boy has been playing like a man, and we're going to put him through the splits with a little statistical breakdown. And we're actually, it's not a true comparison. We're not saying he needs to play like Luol Deng, but this is more of a, we're applauding him for his efforts. And we'll take a look at Luol's numbers. These are all-star numbers, by the by. 39.8 minutes per game. That's almost 40. That's a lot. 17.4 points per game. Shooting 34% from the arc, which is not tremendous, but it's a key stat for the Chicago Bulls because it's something that's missing in their offensive arsenal. 6.4 rebounds per game and 3 assists. He fills the stat sheet nicely. So the Bulls' record has been 3-2 with Jimmy Butler in the starting lineup, and you're saying, oh, 3-2, that's not too bad. They did have a 3-game winning streak, and for you Chicago Bulls fans, you've been watching the team closely, and you thought, hey, we should be able to beat the Washington Wizards, right? That's actually a sneaky good team. John Wall is going to be talked about as one of the top point guards in the league in the not-too-distant future. Bradley Beal is going to be a scoring machine. Trevor Ariza can run the court just as well as any small forward in the game. And Emeka Okafor and Nene, when they're in the post together, that's just a lot of human being in there, man. It's a lot to box out. But here's the real stat. The Bulls went into that game with a 3-game winning streak. And they have yet to win 4 in a row this year. So the trend continues. Jimmy, over that 5-game span, has averaged 45.2 minutes per game. Yeah. How many minutes are in a basketball game? There were 2 overtime games in that 5-game span. But still, that's a lot of minutes. 14.2 points per game, 22% from the arc. But the important key here is that he shot the ball from the arc. If you watch basketball at the NBA level, you're talking about a lot of guys who are really tall, really long, really quick. The players, they get bigger, taller, longer, stronger. The court stays the exact same dimensions, okay? It doesn't get smaller, it doesn't get bigger. So spacing is absolutely key. So it's important that you, when your players are open, they take the shots, right? The defense has to respect the perimeter game. And even though he shot 22%, he did take his fair share of threes. 8.6 rebounds per game. That's athleticism and hustle at play there. This guy can bounce, and he gets after it for 45.2 minutes per game. 8.6 rebounds per game. You know how many power forwards that are in the starting lineup that do not average that many rebounds? 2.6 assists per game. Now, he did get blanked in that Wizards game on the assist total, so it dropped it a bit. But around 3 assists per game is pretty nice from your small forward, especially one who doesn't handle the ball that often. So that is the splits for Jimmy Boy Butler, who has filled in very nicely for Luol Deng, but we do hope Luol will be back very soon. We move on to the UFC on Fox 6. On Saturday, the main event was a couple 125-pounders. That's right. A total of 250 pounds of fighter were in the cage. Not technically. Obviously, they cut a lot of weight to get down to 125. But both fighters were listed at 5'3". And if people stand 5'3", stand next to each other, they should look the same height, correct? I do not think John Dodson is 5'3". I think he's more 5'2". And one heck of an explosive athlete, because the first two rounds, he implemented some nice counter-striking with some big left hands. In the second round, he put down the champion, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, I believe 3 times. And 2 of those times, he really connected right on the mouth, right on the chin. And just a testament to the shape that Johnson is in and the mindset he has. He was shaken physically, but he got right back to it, implemented his game plan of coming forward, and he did that for 5 rounds, 25 minutes. And that's how he pulled off this victory. It was pure championship pedigree. And also, for me, the one thing that stands out in MMA fights, it's such a new sport, and you're seeing these gyms pop up everywhere, and everyone's saying, I'm a head coach, I'm a head trainer, blah, blah, you know. All these labels are coming up. You know, I'm a fight guru, whatever that is. And you hear a lot of these camps devise game plans for their fighters coming into these big fights. And you can usually hear, you know, the one thing that I don't like is when these fights are on Fox and FX, you have commercials in between rounds, you know, 1 minute of commercials. So you don't get to hear what the trainers are saying. Or the cornermen, which is what I would like to define right now. You can be a good trainer, you can be a good head trainer, you can be a good coach, but there's a huge difference between that and a cornerman. A cornerman only has less than a minute to implement what he thinks his fighter should do in the next 5 minutes. And this happens between every single round. So in a normal fight of 3 rounds, you get to do it 2 times, not counting the before the fight. But you should know what you're going to do before the fight. You know, the game plan is set. And for me, Demetrius Johnson, I mean, Matt Hume is his head trainer, head coach, whatever. But he's a fantastic cornerman. If you hear what he's telling him to do between rounds and how to stick to the game plan and what the little things to change. For me, the biggest change in that fight was round 3, 4, and 5 when he started implementing cage control, dirty box, and the plum grip, because John Dodson seemed like he didn't understand how to defend the plum. He kept trying to reverse it and get his own plum grip in there, and every time he went high, Demetrius Johnson went low, double leg takedown. And that, to me, was the big difference, the key to the fight right there. And the scorecard showed it, 48-47, 2 rounds to 3. Congratulations to the true flyweight champion, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. Also, I learned that Anthony Pettis is faster than the rest of the 155ers. This guy's strikes, hands, and with his feet, just the speed and the accuracy. He's not winding up. He's throwing right from the hip or right from the shoulder, and he's going right after guys with accurate, quick strikes. That fight didn't last one round with a very tough human being in Donald Cerrone. He got caught with two nice liver kicks that put him away, but right from the beginning of the fight, confidence went out the door for Cerrone. I believe he threw a jab, and maybe he was going a 1-2 real quick just to get distance. And Pettis threw, I believe, a left hook and hit him right in the chin, and he didn't even see it coming. And it clipped him, and I think from then on he was like, this guy's a lot faster than me. I'm going to have to come forward, and I'm going to have to stay in front of him and, you know, out-tough it. Well, your liver is only so tough, Mr. Cerrone. So congratulations to Anthony Pettis, who looks like he set himself up for a big title fight, depending on what the UFC is going to do there with Benson Henderson and Gilbert El Nino Melendez, the Strikeforce champion, who is now in the UFC as the Strikeforce has become defunct. Thanks, Zuffa. Also at 155, TJ Grant took out a very tough Matt Wyman, who used to be called Handsome Matt Wyman. Now he's just regular old Matt Wyman. And this is a underutilized technique, but that Muay Thai standing elbow, when guys get the half plumb and just punish a guy's face with those quick short elbows when they're up against the fence, because you really don't have anywhere to go. And he just blasted Wyman with some vicious elbows. If you want to see some gross, brutal slow-mo, check out the highlights to that fight. You get to see the biggest blood-infused snot bubble come shooting out of Wyman's nose right before his demise. And TJ Grant, who just came down from 170 last year or the year before and is on a roll in the 155 division. And that is a stacked division. If you win two fights at 155 at the lightweight division, you're basically on your way to being a contender. And then if you lose to a top guy, guess what? Now everyone's going to tell you to go move down to 145. That's how just stacked the division is. It's very hard to get a winning streak. Even a great fighter like Anthony Pettis, he got grounded out by Clay Guida, who won a very, very close decision to Hatsu Hayoki in his 145 debut, which I do not believe implementing the waist lock hump when you take a guy down, get a waist lock, and you hump him, that's not a key to the victory. That's not top control. That's not winning a fight. There's no point that should be allowed in there. And Hatsu Hayoki, what an active guard. I mean, he had Guida in trouble a couple different times with arm and triangle submissions. MMA judges are from all different facets of the world still. You still have guys with 2 decades worth of boxing experience judging an MMA fight who couldn't even tell you how to spell jiu-jitsu, have never been to a grappling tournament. Yet here they are scoring a fight in the highest level of MMA, in the highest level of the sport, UFC. That's pretty ridiculous. So it was a great night for fights. In NHL news, the Chicago Blackhawks are now 6-0, and that's great stuff. For the first time in franchise history, the Chicago Blackhawks reel off 6 wins to start the season. On Saturday, they defeated Columbus with a bit of controversy there, I have to say. There was a no-goal call that was pretty questionable, which actually helped aid the Chicago Blackhawks there, because that game did go into overtime, so that goal would have possibly given them their first loss of the season. But Corey Kurt stuck it out, played tough, and he was back in goal against the Detroit Red Wings in Chicago, defending the United Center. Other things I took from that those two games is that Nick Leddy and Sheldon Brookbank, the ex-Duck that was picked up in free agency, is a lot better than Nick Leddy and Michael Roosevelt. A lot better. I don't know where Steve Montador is going to fit in when he comes off the injured list, but I do like the top 6 defensemen for the Hawks thus far. I am still worried about the situation in goal. Crawford has looked terrific. Tip of the hat to him. He's done it before, though, He's also reeled off 5 games of very low percentage goaltending, low save percentage. And Ray Emery, this is only one game, but he looked pretty awful in the second game of the season. And the Hawks will be on NBC Sports on Wednesday, taking on the Minnesota Wild, who are still figuring things out. But that should still be a very good matchup up there in Minnesota, eh? In a bit of bad news, the Boston Celtics had a secret injury to Rajon Rondo. It wasn't secret to everyone else but Rajon Rondo, who spoke to an ESPN reporter before he went into the locker room knowing he wasn't going to play. And everyone already knew that his MRI had come up positive, that he had torn his ACL. But he didn't know it. So he was walking around, and as a reporter said, he was hopping around, and he had no idea, and she was the one who actually made the news to Rajon Rondo. So the Celtics are now without their all-star point guard, their playmaker, a guy who obviously plays a ton of minutes, one of the best passers in the game. He makes his fair share of knucklehead plays, but he's kept those down this year. He's looked terrific. So what are the Celtics going to do? They brought in a lot of new pieces. Are any of these pieces going to fit in at point guard? This team isn't one of the top teams in the East right now. So playoff seeding-wise, you're not looking at a team who needs to pull it together so they can keep competing. This is a team that still needs to figure it out. And now they're without their best player. Is this the time to break up the pieces? Or are you going to give Jason Terry, a combo guard, a chance to handle the ball? You have Paul Pierce there. He'll also handle the ball. Avery Bradley, he'll manage the game for you. And then you have Leandro Barbosa, who used to be able to be that combo guard, much like Terry, and handle the ball and take it to the rack and make the right pass. I'm not sure if he's that guy anymore. I would like to see this. I watched the NBDL game, which is the NBA's poor attempt at having basically a minor league. And one of the draft picks of the Celtics, Fab Melo, the Syracuse center, who's a really big center, he's very awkward, but he was putting in basket after basket with a really goofy-looking running hook. I'm not saying he's going to be a great starting center, but Kevin Garnett does start for them at center right now, and maybe it's time to start developing someone other than Sullinger, who is also not a center. I'd like to see him and Barbosa in the lineup, just because it's two Brazilian guys. When have you ever seen two Brazilian guys in the same lineup? So a lot of movable pieces there for the Celtics. Maybe they'll be the team to watch come the trade deadline, which would be a lot of fun. Speaking of other things that are coming up on this show, this week I'm going to take on topics such as NFL head coaches. We'll talk about who's at the helm for your NFL team. And we'll also take an early look at the NFL draft for the Chicago Bears. Here's a spoiler alert. The main theme will be offensive linemen. Get out of here. No way. Yeah. Turns out the Bears' offensive line is terrible. And I'm not talking about just last season. So tune right back in tomorrow. I hope you have a great day and night. And this has been another edition of Hey, It's a Sports Show with Lance Robbins.